What's up, y'all? This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio at apologiaradio.com. Want to talk to you guys about an amazing connection that we have right now with Whitfield Theological Seminary. I want you to run over to whitfield.edu, whitfield.edu, whitefield.edu. I want you to check out the programs they have. They have undergraduate programs at Whitfield College, and they also have Whitfield Theological Seminary for the graduate degree and above and beyond. I think you'll really be impressed with the rigorous nature of the classes, the consistent biblical worldview taught and adhered to. I want you to contact Whitfield Theological Seminary at whitfield.edu. Get a hold of our friend, Dr. Kenneth Talbot, and start your classes today. ApologiaRadio.com.
Non-rock a boatus must stop. I don't want to rock the boat. I want to sink it.
Are you going to bark all day, little doggy? Or are you going to bite?
Delusional is okay in your worldview. I'm an animal. You don't chastise chickens for being delusional. You don't chastise pigs for being delusional. So you calling me delusional using your worldview is perfectly okay. It doesn't really hurt.
She hung up on me.
What?
Desperate times call for faithful men and not for careful men. The careful men come later and write the biographies of the faithful men, lauding them for their courage.
Go into all the world and make disciples. Not go into the world and make buddies. Not to make brosives.
Right.
Don't go into the world and make homies.
Right.
Disciples.
I got a bit of a jiggle neck. That's a joke, Pastor.
No, when we have the real message of truth, we cannot let somebody say they're speaking truth when they're not.
Take an amazing journey to a place that will blow your mind and move your heart so you will never be the same again.
What's up, y'all? This is Apologia Radio, apologiaradio.com. From Phoenix, Arizona, 1360 KPXQ, Faith Talk, baby. We're back, another week, another show. This is like nearly 90 episodes. Really cool. Hey, Joy.
Yes.
What's up? Guess what?
What?
Got a word yesterday on the page that somewhere in California, I think Sacramento or something like that, got word from one of our listeners that there was a radio station, another Christian station, and this radio program took the entire 30 minutes of their program, and one of our listeners turned the radio on, and it was us. It was our show.
Really?
And they basically cut up our show into segments and played our show as their show, like on a Christian station in California.
Interesting.
Interesting, right?
I feel like we should be getting
some royalties?
Paid for that.
Something? So that's kind of cool, don't you think?
That is awesome.
I think it's awesome. I do. Huh. I think it's amazing. So
that's cool.
You guys noticed something today that we, oddly enough, don't have the bear in the studio today, right?
No.
Oh, we don't?
No.
Oh, I guess not.
The bear is gone.
I just looked over for the first time and realized.
Yeah. Well,
not him.
Well, he's not here today, Joy, so calm down. Okay, we can handle this. Everybody, that's Joy Temby over there.
Hello.
The girl. And I'm Jeff Durbin.
You are.
The other host on this show. Well, why'd you look at me like that? What's with the eyeballs?
It was interesting because you didn't push your nickname.
Oh, the ninja? That's because everyone already knows. But we have, in the studio, in place of the bear, Elliot!
What is up?
No, skinny jeans!
No, I thought you were going to skip that for a second.
Little hands?
No.
Big Hearts Club?
No.
Ha, ha, ha. Elliot! What's up, Elliot? This is just a recording from last Sunday. Elliot's warm-up for worship. This is how he warms up. Gets them tight little skilly jeans on. Little hands. So what's happening, Elliot?
I got to have little hands for my little pockets because the jeans are so tight.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks.
As usual, it's good to have you.
Thank you. I appreciate the warm intro.
Yeah. Well, man, I love you, man. So how things been with you, man? How's worship going? How are things with worship?
You know, why don't you tell me? I got a lot of good feedback. We got the privilege of playing at Arizona Community Church this last Sunday because our normal place was booked out. So we got to play in this wonderful facility. And from a worship standpoint and a sound standpoint, it was really incredible to be on that stage and just to kind of hear what the band sounds like when put into like a professional environment. So
yeah,
got a lot of really nice feedback on that and compliments. So thank you to those who said that. We're really just happy that you guys were blessed. And so things are going really good. I'm really proud and honored to be a part of that whole thing.
Very, very good. So,
oh yes. Well, I'm awake. It's on 3 hours of sleep, but I'm awake.
We got Elliot awake now.
Yep.
So today we have a show. We're going to talk about all kinds of cool stuff. We're going to talk about Calvinism, sort of prep you on what the Bible says about our condition, about salvation, sacrifice of Jesus, God's power in carrying us all the way through life, loving Him. Maybe get into some things about even the UFC.
Ooh.
Yeah. But before, and oh, also Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobby, we'll do a little discussion on that. But for now, Elliot.
Yes?
All of us are really fans of Star Wars, but you are like an uber fan.
I am.
Of Star Wars.
Yes, I am.
So fill us in on the latest details on Star Wars Episode 7.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say that the best sermon that you ever gave, Jeff, was like 2 weeks ago. When you used Star Wars as an analogy for why we should take into consideration the history of John the Baptist and what he was referring to when he was talking, and he used how we needed to know the prequels to kind of go and know who Luke and Leia were and where their origins started. I was like in the congregation,
right there.
Tears were coming down. I was like, preach it, brother, preach it.
I understand John the Baptist now.
Yeah, I do. He's like Obi-Wan or something. No. What do you want to talk about Episode 7? So, first of all, I have to say, it is very, very true that I'm a huge Star Wars fan, and I don't know how else I could explain it, except that there have been times in my life, on more than one occasion, I was like, man, I really hope Jesus doesn't come back until after this new Star Wars trilogy is finished.
That's awesome.
And
I've thought that about The Hobbit.
And I'm serious. I'm like, you know, God, it's cool, and I know heaven's going to be so much better than Star Wars, but can we just have this one thing?
Just this last thing.
Even if it means I have to be single the rest of my life if I can live.
You're
through.
Bargaining with God. If I just do these things.
You know, I didn't say my love for Star Wars was rational or...
Lord, nobody really knows the day or hour, so it's not like you're breaking any promises.
It's true. That's true. That's awesome. Right. I'm not asking too much. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to fail to mention that you're actually wearing a Star Wars shirt right now as we speak.
That's true, and I forgot that we were going to talk about this. I'm wearing a Millennium Falcon
it's
shirt.
Just what you do.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is a huge, huge part of me.
All right, so fill us in. What's up with the stuff we need to know about Star Wars, Episode 7?
Okay, so the first thing you need to know is that it's coming out December 2015.
Is that still true, though, with Harrison Ford breaking his leg?
Yeah, so I'll get into that, too. So being directed by J.J. Abrams, not George Lucas. So the rumor is that Han Solo plays... Okay, spoiler alerts for anybody who's really sensitive about that. Not that anybody listening to this show probably cares. But Han Solo is rumored to be like the main character in this next...
Which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, which is great. They're bringing back the original cast, as you all know. There's tons of rumors out there as to what the plot's going to be. But unfortunately, and in somewhat of an ironic way, Harrison Ford broke his leg when one of the doors from the Millennium Falcon, or you know, the set of the Millennium Falcon, fell on his leg and broke it. And so it's rumored that he's going to be out up to 6 months, although it looks like he might recover faster than that. So they actually had a meeting as to whether or not they were going to delay the movie or they were going to rewrite the script.
Were you freaking out? You were freaking out, weren't you? You had an anxiety attack.
Man, neither of those situations are good because I don't want to wait any longer for the movie, but I really would not like them to like rewrite the scripts.
You don't want them to compromise just so it can come out on time.
Right. But see, the thing, if they push it to the summer of next year, they're going up against Avengers 2 and Batman versus Superman. And then you have Star Wars. I mean, that would just be the craziest summer ever. So, so
I feel like they could hide that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, they have hidden pregnant women, like in shows, like a woman will be full 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And you won't even know.
Just film her nose.
There's a lot of great memes out there with people like digitally.
Excuse me, May.
people like saying who should play Harrison Ford's leg, like actual like actors and stuff. But yeah,
it'd just be CGI.
They could just have him sitting down at the Falcon all day. They don't need to show his legs. You know what I mean?
He's a little older, so are they? We're not expecting the same. The same guy that's like rolling around.
Well,
and
speak for yourself,
jumping.
Joy. I expect this.
No, I mean, but that's probably what he was doing. I'd like to think that he was doing something really awesome, you know, like jump, you know, like, I don't know, jumping around, fighting off stormtroopers, and the thing came down and broke his leg because he's Harrison Ford and he's awesome.
Yes.
But, you know, probably what happened is that he tripped, you know.
Someone just looked at his leg wrong and it
he
broke.
Went to go get his Epsom salt.
You want to know, when I heard that the original cast was in the new episode,
right.
I thought that they were going to have like a cameo appearance. They'd be kind of like walk across, hey, Harrison Ford. It blows my mind that they're actually playing a big part of episode 7.
Yeah, well, and so kind
I think
of,
it blows their mind too that at least some of them, that they have work again.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, they're all still alive, so that's good. I just have some hunches. This is just me speculating. I think that they're going to kill off Han Solo in this movie, either in this one or the second one.
Are you going to cry?
No, because they actually were going to kill him off in the original draft of The Return of the Jedi, but George Lucas didn't want to do that because they wanted to keep him alive. But I think that this
George Lucas actually got something right there.
Yeah, I mean, but think about it. Like, Han Solo, he needs to go out in a blaze of glory. Like, he's not a guy who's going to sit down, you know, and have his grandkids come visit him in the hospital and play space chess with him. You know, like, he needs to go out doing something awesome. Like, I could see him taking the Millennium Falcon and, like, rescuing somebody in this movie. And then, like, because what they're talking about is there's a whole new generation of kids coming in. If you haven't seen the cast, a whole bunch of new actors coming in. It's going to be like a kind of a passing of the torch movie, I think, to the younger generation. It's rumored they're going to focus on the Skywalker kids or whatever. But I can kind of see. Okay. So they can kind of see where, you know, that this could be a good movie for that. The rumor is that they might, like, the story plot, the plot might be Han Solo gathers together some people to go try to find Luke Skywalker because he's gone missing or something like that. But those are all the rumors.
Yeah.
Well, there's lots more, but
wait, tell me the story about the director that went in to see the set and.
So Kevin Smith, Jay and Silent Bob fame. So he's the big guy that always wears the jersey. He's a huge Star Wars fan, and he apparently went to visit J.J. Abrams in the set. And because he signed a non-disclosure agreement, just like everyone else, he can't talk about what he saw. But all he did was tweet out a picture of him in tears, in literal tears, saying that, you know, I can't believe I got to see this. You know, the Force is strong with this movie and stuff. And so it seems to be that he was pretty happy about what he saw. And from what we've seen, they're like moving more towards practical effects. They're getting back to puppets and stuff like that. They've actually had some leaked photos of people in puppets. So if you're a fan of like old school filmography, you should be excited for
that's
it.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm beyond excited for
it. Yeah, episodes 1, 2, and 3, just too much CGI, and it didn't feel anything like the original series.
No,
it was awful.
And I mean, J.J. Abrams did a great job rebooting Star Trek, and he's a huge Star Wars fan. They got some of the original writers from the original trilogy to write the script for this one, so I foresee many great things.
Very good. So favorite scene from Star Wars?
Oh, gosh.
Quick.
Okay, it's got to be when Luke in Return of the Jedi is battling Darth Vader at the very end, right before he cuts Darth Vader's hand off.
Favorite scene? Go.
Obviously, what's the part with the little creatures?
Ewoks. Okay, but there's a lot of Ewoks scenes.
All of them.
Okay, all of the Ewoks. My favorite is when I was a kid. I'll never forget when he slices open the animal to put Luke inside.
Oh, that is awesome.
And he says, I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
OGRadio.com.
We'll be right back.
Sometimes I lay under the moon and thank God I'm breathing. Then I pray, don't take me soon, 'cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I down.
All right, so we're back, guys. ApologyRadio.com. Go to ApologyRadio.com and get the past episodes. Here's how you can join us in this ministry, really, of Apologia Church. You could join us by picking up a past episode, sharing it on your social media. And you can join us by praying for us and with us as we bring the gospel
around the world, believe me, with this broadcast, you join us in that. Also, you can join with us in this ministry by giving. If this show blesses you, you know, oftentimes, let me just take a sidestep here. You listen to Christian radio and you'll hear, you know, these pledge drives where they spend, you know, several days or a week or whatever doing pledge drives of, you know, join with us and partner with us and, you know, giving money per month, donating money per month so that you can keep us on the air so you can listen to your Christian music. Okay. Many times these Christian music stations aren't clearly communicating the gospel to the culture. It's just sort of what I would refer to as spiritual woo-woo, right? But you know, they fill up with the donations and they get fully funded. A show like this is punching a hole in the kingdom of darkness. You need to know that. We get emails constantly from people coming out of the cults, people turning to Christ out of atheism, from believers that are beginning ministries. For example, Elliot and Joy, I'm not sure if I share this with you, but one of our listeners that's been a longtime listener, but so challenged by the fact that, I know I actually did tell Joy, so challenged by the discussions we've had on ministry to abortion mills and hearing about what Apologia Church has done outside of abortion mills, that they went out this last weekend with six people on their team, formed a team to go to abortion mill in their area.
That's awesome.
So, and that's just one example out of many examples like that. So this show is not only equipping you and others and bringing the gospel into the culture and providing reasons for our faith, but it's raising up little ministries across the nation to reach people with the gospel. And it's incredible. And we got nothing to do with it. It's all to the glory of God. But when you give to Apologia Radio, you're giving to the work and ministry of Apologia Church to keep us fighting. If this blesses you, I'm going to challenge you right now. Please go and give at apologiaradio.com. All right. Joe Temby, what's up on the BuzzFeed? We got all kinds of really cool theological stuff, things to go through today. So stuff on Hobby Lobby, which is sort of a moment of rejoicing in a way. But Joy, what's up?
Okay, well, there's many good things on BuzzFeed today, but like I told you, many of them do not translate well to radio. So basically, just go on BuzzFeed every day and laugh. But we do have one thing that I can read. It is 15 of the creepiest notes a child has ever written. Okay, I'm not going to read all 15. Some of them aren't that great. Okay, this is a card. There's little, like, purple and red hearts all over the place. And it says, "Mom and Dad, you're lucky you're alive. Happy Valentine's Day."
Did you just snort, Elliot?
I did.
I think you did.
What? Sorry.
"To Dad. Hi. How are you doing in hell?"
Oh.
"Love, Joey."
Gosh. What happened? what was that?
I don't know. I don't know what it's about. Unfortunately, we don't get the context here.
He
just
probably
get
meant the other way around. Like, how in the H are you doing? Probably because he probably hears people say that. I don't know.
There you go.
That's just like the way a child's mind
works. There you
works.
Go. Yeah. That could be it.
How are you doing in
or
hell?
Or he's Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, there you go. "My Halloween costume. I hope I will be a bloody, bloody, bloody guy with a knife and an eye patch.
Oh.
When I have my costume, I will sneak into houses."
Oh.
"All right. This is some sort of like homework sheet. What will you be doing when you're 100 years old?" The child's response was, "Breaking out of my tomb." And there is an accompanying picture of him breaking out. It looks like he has like guns, so maybe he needs to shoot his way out. Like, there's gonna be people trying to keep him in there.
All right.
All right.
That's so masculine.
Yeah, exactly. "If I caught a leprechaun, I would kill him." And accompanying picture as well.
All right.
"Good morning. I see my assassins have failed." "Love, Catherine."
That's frightening.
Okay, here's a list about this kid's father. There's like this long list, like his favorite color, all that stuff. At the very end, it says, number 15, "I will always come to his grave." Oh. He says things like, "He likes work. One day he will die. And I will always come to his grave."
Oh.
This little note that says, "I'm sad you're living." That's it. Then here is a picture of someone's head getting chopped off with an axe. It's like a little stick figure, and it says, "Dear Valerie, get out of my life."
Oh my goodness.
If you put
straight to the point.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't mess around.
I'm just going to go to the very end of the spectrum here.
Yeah.
Bypass the niceties.
Dear Mom, if you put a password on that, I will make your life a nightmare. And then there's I Love Satan. Whoa. I'm assuming there's a misspelling there.
Probably Santa, but...
Yes, exactly. Dear Uncle Brian, I hope you have a good birthday. I love you, Uncle Brian. How are you? Have you heard of Satan? He makes you do bad things.
Oh!
Which actually, we might talk about that.
Yeah.
And then here's a paper towel with a very like cryptic message written on it that supposedly was slid under a door. And it just says, "Let us in."
Whoa.
But it looks like it's written in blood.
Yeah. It's like written by the children of the corn.
Yeah, exactly.
Goodness gracious.
That's it.
Well, that was refreshing.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, look into the dark hearts of children.
Do you have any stories about your kids, Jeff? Have they ever done anything similar to that?
Let's see here. I have many, many stories about my kids. I think one of the things that I've been thinking about lately is just the innocence in a sense of your children, like to just have no idea. Like, you know, my son Turtle, I have all kinds of Turtle stories. He's 5 years old, and he is I teach him karate. And so he's learning karate with his big brother right now and everything else. And he's like a little karate nut. Like, I mean, my other kids, years and years ago when I had this martial arts school, it was one of the most popular karate programs really in Arizona. It was very successful, hugely successful. That my two oldest kids, Imogen and Sage, they were alive then and, you know, big enough to do karate. Could care less. Mm-hmm. We're winning competitions across the nation and everything else. I'm like, guys, you know, I can teach you and you'll be able to get big trophies and, you know, you can do your best and have fun. And they're like, whatever.
Whatever.
I'll hang out. I'll just play in the karate school or whatever. And, but my 5-year-old is like me. He's a little karate nut. Like last night, it was 10 o'clock at night and I was holding a pad while he was punching and kicking it and he was running around doing flips. He's like, look, I'm a ninja. Look at me. Look what I can do. Look what I can do. And, anyway, my turtle is 5 years old. He is like obsessed with like, okay, if someone broke in, that's what always he said. He says, Dad, if someone broke in, every day that discussion, if someone broke in, I would punch their face. I'm like, well, I don't know, Turtle. Like, you should probably come and get me. He's like, no, I don't need you. I'd punch his face. I'll punch his face, and he can't. I'll punch his face, and like he thinks like that's it. Like he's always obsessing about if someone breaks in, I'll punch his face. He thinks that'll do it.
Just take innocence. Care of it.
Yeah. ApologyRadio.com.
ApologyRadio. We'll be right back.
This bitch is spinning in space. I will be light, yo, 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 yo. I will be light, oh, oh, oh. I will be light, oh, 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 oh. I will be light, yeah. Lights out, time will continue without you.
What's up, y'all?
In the end, it's not about you, but what did you do?
All right, so... there's a moment of rejoicing here in a sense. Joy, do you remember when we first started Apologia Radio? One of the first shows we did was on Hobby Lobby.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yep.
So somewhere in the archives there, near the very beginning, there's an episode we did on the Hobby Lobby situation when it first rose up. This is when Obamacare first really was breaking in and it, you know... And if you're new to the show, listen. Obamacare is ultimately lawlessness as a result of a lawless government forcing people to pay for something that they don't ask for. Now, if you're okay with that, then you've lost a grip on what is just. This is not something you would see in a society that is under the law of God. Forcing you to pay for a product you didn't ask for, threatening to penalize you if you don't. That is tyranny. And you wouldn't have seen that in the Christian Republic that America once was. And so here we are, and now it's in force. So when it went into effect, Joy, remember we discussed just the unjust nature of the law and the fact that Hobby Lobby is owned by Christians, mm-hmm. and the Green family is actually, they're the owners of the largest private collection of biblical artifacts in the world.
You know, they want to start a Bible museum in Washington, D.C.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
They've been, like, working on... I mean, I don't know exactly how close they are, but I know that it's something they've been working, like, for a while at trying to achieve.
Oh, that's cool.
So somewhere to, like, house all the stuff that they have.
That's news to me. Mm-hmm. Was it $300 million? I think that sounds like it's popping in my head. Like,
I think we had
looked it up before. So the Green family, the owners of Hobby Lobby, have the largest private collection of biblical artifacts in the world. So that includes manuscripts and a bunch of other things. And so, for example, I think when Wallace from Dallas Theological Seminary was debating Bart Ehrman on the issue of biblical manuscripts and the transmission of the text, he mentioned, and it was a bomb dropping in that last debate he had, that in the last minute of his opening statement, he mentions that they had just recently discovered, five new manuscripts related to New Testament transmission. And I think that you have the Gospel of Luke there and you have the Gospel according to Mark. And in this debate, I'm not sure what the status is of it right now. In the debate, the fragment from Mark dated, they said, from within a generation of the eyewitnesses of the resurrection itself, that generation. And then Mark, I think, was from 100 or 105, or sorry, John, or sorry, Luke was 100 or 105 AD. So anyway, that stuff was called the Green Collection, the assumption that was the Green family from Hobby Lobby. The interesting thing is the Hobby Lobby owners, the Green family, they're Christians. Now, when all this kind of came down the pipeline and when we were talking about it, they had actually said, we will not pay for Plan B and the medications that actually force abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was their position. Now, at the time, there was a ruling that there would be like $1 million a day fine. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was like
I forgot all about that.
But... they were risking. And people mm-hmm. don't realize this. If you're just getting into this now, the Hobby Lobby family was risking paying $1 million a day fine as a result of resisting this tyranny, right? Mm-hmm. But they took the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, something to the effect of, if we got to lose our business, we got to lose our business. Yeah. We're not going to abandon our faith.
It was not just like this little like, well, I don't want to do that, like pouting thing. Like they were deeply, deeply convicted about this. They were not folding at all.
That's right. And so they refused. And we've finally gotten the, I guess, final ruling on this.
Mm-hmm.
Supreme Court voted, and it was 5-4. I believe the vote was 5-4 in favor of Hobby Lobby not being forced to pay for medications that force abortion. And so leave it to the liberal media and the left to not pay attention to details. Often that is the case with the unbelieving worldview as they promote their agenda. They don't pay attention to details, and that happens often. But now they're actually protesting and everything else, saying Hobby Lobby is refusing health care to women. That's how they're obviously painting the picture, is they're refusing health care to women. And what they don't realize is, number one, that's not true. Abortion, number one, isn't health care whatsoever. But there are actually 16 forms of birth control that Hobby Lobby does provide, was providing, and continues to provide. Many of us even have problems with those things. But the four that they have opted out of and said we will not pay for have to do with the morning after pill, the week mm-hmm. after pill, and such. We'll be right back to talk about this more. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio. We'll be right back.
Has provided health care for their employees. By the way, Hobby Lobby has for full-time employees a minimum wage of $14 an hour.
Which is more than I make an hour, just letting you know.
What a wicked corporation. They give their employees Sundays off. Mm-hmm. I like me now. Sundays off, minimum $14 an hour wage for their full-time employees, providing health care, and all the rest. So they take a huge risk in fighting this battle in court. Huge risk with their business. Huge fines. Unbelievable fines that many of us would never be able to pay, repay in numerous lifetimes. And they risked a lot to fight against this tyranny and injustice. All right, so they provide, have provided male condoms, female condoms, diaphragms with spermicide, sponges with spermicide, cervical caps with spermicide, spermicide alone, birth control pills with estrogen and it's called the combined pill. Birth control pills alone, the mini pill, birth control pills, extended continuous use, contraceptive patches, contraceptive rings, progestin injections, implantable rods, vasectomies, female sterilization surgeries, female sterilization implants. Okay, so 16 things that they provide. 4 they do not provide. The week after pill and the morning after pill or whatever it is, the murder pills. So Hombo says, no, I'm not paying for those. And so the protesters and everything else, people protesting Liver Media and everything else, have actually painted the picture that Hobby Lobby, like, you know, is not paying for health care for women. They will not provide it. And you don't have the right to deny women access to health care, blah, 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 blah. Same old stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they've organized, even George Trekkie is encouraging.
George Trekkie.
Yeah. Takai.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's promoting a boycott of Hobby Lobby. And I saw a wonderful quote from somebody. I must use it from some conservative journalist. Sorry, I don't remember the name. But, you know, in light of George Takei, you know, saying to boycott Hobby Lobby, they said, well, I don't think we're too worried. There's not many liberal people that shop at do-it-yourself stores.
Dang.
Boom.
Ouch.
Ouch. Anyway, and so let's talk about that. Okay, what happens is Supreme Court ruling is in favor of Hobby Lobby. You don't have to provide these pills. They're murder pills. There's a whole other discussion we can have on the other birth control things. That's a separate discussion. I think it's a good discussion to have, healthy discussion to have. However, we're talking about the specific pills that are meant to abort your child. It's what you take the pill for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You take it to kill your baby. That's why it exists. Hobby Lobby says no. And so everyone says now, down with Hobby Lobby. And there was even a tweet from a journalist that suggested that in protest of Hobby Lobby's decision,
I saw this,
people should go and, quote, TP the store with condoms rather than toilet paper. And the other suggestion was that people should engage in physical intimacy in the store. These are the sorts of things.
It's so ridiculous. I mean, like, what, oh, man, it's crazy, but it's also just, it's crazy, but it's not surprising in some sense, because that's the natural outpouring of someone whose heart is, you know, hardened towards Christ. And you just, any excuse to push your own sinfulness. I mean, anything goes, you know what I mean? Like, it's just completely fits in with that worldview of, you know, I can just say or do whatever I want. But everybody else is held to this sort of higher standard that, I don't know, it's just hypocritical in so many ways, and it's disgusting.
Well, you remember in last year we've had many instances where we talked about Christians, you know, standing against sort of a business that fights for abortion or whatever, and we talk about Starbucks and everything else. Many Christians say, you know, I'm still going to shop there, and I'm like, oh, you know, whatever. But, you know, I have a difficult time investing what I invested before in Starbucks just because of their stance on things. I mean, it's just where I feel, and I'm not going to push that on anybody else. But the point is when someone says, as a Christian, I'm going to boycott this business because of their stance in these areas, and I'm just not going to support them, give them my money, that's it. That's like where the line stops. Like, I'm not going to support him. But perhaps they might stand outside with a sign or something like that, notifying people what they believe. But the other side of this says, go in the store and engage in human sexuality.
It's so juvenile.
In the glitter aisle.
It's just so unbelievably juvenile, you know. And the fact that adults are, like, supporting this. And it's just, I don't know.
Well, also, here you go. They provide birth control.
Yes.
They do.
And it's not even true. The argument is not even true. You're saying that they're denying women birth control? They're not. Okay, end of discussion. Stop. Stop.
It's over.
Stop it.
Right. So, okay, I got to play this for you. So it just goes to show the level of misinformation that the left and liberal media goes to. And by the way, if you're listening to the show, we're Christians. if you call me right wing, I'm going to try to sit you down and talk to you about that, because I do not side with, I don't see the Republican Party as representative of my beliefs, honestly. I want to stand the word of God as the standard. And so when I say right, left, I'm just using the terminology. I don't even like the terminology because of its origins. Where it comes from is not, I think, a good indication of where I'm at. But, you know, let's call it the left, the liberal media. It's, you know, that's kind of how people use the terminology. So the misinformation that goes on, and so people don't even know what really Hobby Lobby even believes or is fighting for. So here are some of the critics protesting the issue that just happened with the Supreme Court ruling. Here, listen to some of the protesters respond. Here you go. Pull it up here from the Daily Signal.
Outside the Supreme Court, sidewalks were filled with activists arguing that under Obamacare, family-owned companies can be forced to pay for abortion-inducing drugs and devices. We caught up with them to find out how much they know about this case. What specific drugs is Hobby Lobby challenging in this case?
So the specific drugs, well, I mean, I don't know brand names, but like sort of birth controls and sort of all contraceptives that are sort of covered under, that are now covered under ACA, just sort of contraceptive coverage in general.
They're also fighting against sessions afterwards and talk and consultations about for pregnant women to talk about and discuss what they should do post-pregnancy, which is something that's really important for women.
Nope.
Can you tell me what specific drugs and devices the Green and the Hans families are fighting against?
Devices? I'm sorry.
They're fighting against the contraceptives, Plan B, those types of things that they're those types of drugs.
Do you know the specific contraceptives they're fighting against?
No, I'm not.
Do you know specifically what drugs and devices Hobby Lobby is fighting against?
I'm sorry, I'm 15. I've not read up on the literature, but I believe in the morals and the idea to successfully secure it.
So you don't know what specific contraceptives they're fighting against?
Plan B.
So if you do know the drugs and devices this case is fighting against, can you tell me?
No, I don't think that's important.
Well, they're fighting against various forms of birth control coverage.
Do you know any specifics?
I think they believe that all birth control is not appropriate in their particular faith tradition.
The Han family. I'm sorry, I'm not understanding.
So they're fighting against emergency contraceptives, like basic Plan B pills,
and IUDs.
So not abortifacients. They are contraceptives. I don't know.
I am the first generation!
The Hobby Lobby case was a challenge to just four abortion-inducing drugs and devices. For the Daily Signal, I'm Kelsey Harkness.
There you go. All right. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's
what you're talking about.
What are you talking about? So,
why
yeah.
am I here? What am I doing?
It's horrible as it is. Every older lady that they put on there had no idea what they were doing there.
It's like that Phil Hartman skit, like back in the day, that old SNL skit. I don't know who he was pretending to be. He's in that car. He's like, who am I? What am I doing here? It's just like.
Well, I also like how the guy's like, I don't think it's important. It's like, well, that is kind of the whole reason you're here.
Yeah, they're right.
What if it was like, HIV antivirals? Oh. Would that matter? Like, would it matter?
Right, right. Oh, man.
Well, I think that statement right there plays into sort of a bigger issue. I think that our generation, and probably just as people, we just want something to rally behind, whether or not it's you've even taken the time to sit back and think about what it is that you're doing. You know, people just want to gravitate to have something towards, you know, to worship, and if it's with your fellow people, you know, to rally against anything that's anti-God or
right,
whatever.
There
people,
you go.
People just
that's
are
right.
looking for something to right. attach themselves to,
right?
You know, because that's really the heart of this whole thing. And this is kind of a side issue, but I think one really important thing when we think about this kind of stuff in our lives is how are we cannot let society dictate the argument, the framing of the argument, because you look at the same thing with the homosexual agenda is that, oh, well, it's you're for inequality, you know, you're against equality.
Against equality.
You're a bigot, you're this and that. Well, you haven't even taken the time to think about or research or talk or have a civilized discussion about what it is you're talking about. Here, it's the same thing. Oh, well, you know, you're anti-woman, you're anti-woman's rights. And one thing I like, Matt Walsh wrote a really, it's Matt Walsh, right?
Yes.
Yeah, wrote a really great article. And one thing that he said in it is that, you know, these women are being extremely that are saying that they're against women's rights are being extremely presumptuous. To say that you speak for all women is incredibly arrogant, and it's just outright false. To my right sits a woman who would completely disagree with that. So is Joy being offended? No, absolutely not. She's taking the opposite stance. So, but when you're saying it's against women's rights, when that's what's being promoted and being pushed, you know, the non-thinking person, like the person who says it doesn't really matter what the issues are, is just going to be like, well, this is, of course I'm for women. Let me just, you know, do, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's so, yeah, ridiculous. We have to be better educated and not let it get to this point. We have to take dominion.
Amen. So that. Let me say three things, and then Joy, I want to hear the woman's position on this. So number one, a big problem here is we've already as a culture, obviously, at least on this spectrum, end of the spectrum, these people who are protesting, already accepted Obamacare. Think about it. What's the argument? This is law, and there, you know, that sort of, that's, you know, so we've already accepted the tyranny of Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's just, you know, before we were having arguments, this is not legal, it's not constitutional, it's not moral, it's an injustice. And now the argument is, it's just, well, this is what we have, and that's, it's already assumed. You have to do this, and it's forced upon you, and you don't have any rights here to have any convictions of your own whatsoever here. The next thing is the framing of the argument. Yeah, that's the we need to pay close attention to the framing of the argument, because when you have this discussion happening now, the framing of the argument on their side is this is about women's rights, right? Women's rights. Well, about what? To kill your baby?
Right.
That's the argument. I mean, it's about women's health, women's rights. To kill your baby?
Mm-hmm.
Like the right, the health care to kill your baby. That's what we're talking about. Ending the life of a child, the morning after pill, the week after pill. We're talking about ending the life of a human being within your womb. And that's health care now.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they frame the argument. It's sexual reproduction freedom, right? It's reproductive freedom. And then it's also health care. It's no longer ending the life of a baby in your womb. It's that. So watch how they frame the argument and bring it back to the foundation. Number one, and number three is the get out of my bedroom argument has now failed for them, because now what they're asking is that everyone get into bed with them.
Mm.
Get out of my bedroom. Get out of my bedroom. No, you're asking us to get in the bedroom with you.
Yeah.
We wouldn't. No one wants that. Like, you know, because you're saying, I demand that you pay for this. I demand that you pay for this. I demand you pay for my sexual activity. All the results, you know, thereof. You want us in your bed. You want your boss in your bedroom.
Yeah,
that's what you're asking. You don't want anyone out of your bedroom. You want them in it. You're like, I want you to fund my sex life and all of its consequences. Get in. And the truth is if you want birth control, ultimately, pay for it yourself.
Right.
And if you want these abortion medications mm-hmm. that actually end the life of a child a week later, then pay for it yourself. Let the blood be on your hands,
right,
and not on the hands of your employers. Joy?
How much time do we have left?
About a minute and a half.
Oh, okay.
1 minute.
Well, I mean, I guess I could start out to just say something that I've said a million times on this show, but any sort of regime that is killing women is not pro-women. Mm. I've said it a million times. I'm going to say it again. I mean, it's just, if it's killing a woman, it's not pro-woman, and that's what it's doing. That's what abortion pills do. They kill little tiny women inside of other women.
Yeah.
And so it's an anti-woman movement, actually, because I think in history we'd agree anything that ends the life of women was an anti-woman movement.
Yes.
Like, not something we would all rally behind.
So much for the unbelieving worldview, the feminist-type movement that's so, you know, pro-woman, pro-women. You're right. 500,000 women, little women a year, killed in the wombs of their mothers surgically and buy pills like this that Hobby Lobby has a right to refuse. Praise God for this victory. ApologiaRadio.com.
How many books do you know of that address topics of education and welfare, local government, state government, taxation, money and banking, free markets, courts, war and the military, and the executive power? How many books do you know actually talk about these topics from a biblical perspective and set forth all of the issues, the ideas, the history, and the hurdles, and the blueprints for the way forward? Hi, I'm Joel McDermott with AmericanVision.org. In Restoring America One County at a Time, I cover all these topics and more, showing you how America was once free,
how those freedoms were lost, and giving you an uncompromising biblical approach to get those freedoms back. I focus on practical steps, local solutions, personal sacrifices, and it has a multi-generational vision. So don't just sit around talking about restoring America. Actually do something. And you can start by getting my book, Restoring America, One County at a Time, at AmericanVision.org.
This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio. Get us at ApologiaRadio.com. The profanation of marriage is gaining legs within our culture with the same-sex marriage debate. This is, church, a gospel issue. We have to be salt. We must be light on this issue of same-sex marriage.
This is Joy Temby with Apologia Radio. I urge you guys to pray for the homosexual community, then log on to realharmony.org to equip yourselves with the resources we've provided.
This is the Ministry Bear. Here's the issue. The same-sex attracted community has a symbol that's universally recognized. It's an equal sign. You see it everywhere. Until now, the Christian community has not had a symbol that represents true, harmonious, biblical marriage. Go to realharmony.org and buy a sticker. They're $3 a piece. Get your church to buy them by the truckloads. Help us redeem the culture. And let me reiterate, this is not a political issue only. This is a gospel issue. Realharmony.org.
Praise me, oh, from the ground.
So it's Apologia Radio. Get us at ApologiaRadio.com. Go to the Facebook page. Like the page. Join the movement, guys. Next week, a little preview. Next week, we're going to have a show with...
A show, that's it.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Vocab Malone is going to join us in studio.
Yeah.
From Fanny Pack Radio. And Dr. Jonathan Sarfati from Creation Ministries International. And it's going to be a whole show dedicated to science.
Mm. And they're going to be here.
Yeah.
Science, yo.
It hit me this morning that...
Thank you, Jesse Pinkman. Yo, it's science, yo.
Science, yo. Sorry.
You were saying?
Anyway, I just, like, fanned out a little bit.
There you go.
And I realized this morning that I would get to sit in here with... Vocab, just kidding.
There you go, yeah. So, Vocab Malone and Jonathan Sarfati from Creation Ministries International. Next week's episode scheduled, talk about science, talk about the history of modern science, and all of that, because just lots of reasons. We want to make sure we sort of build a foundation for everyone, but also we had an atheist take a shot at us, but he went in the wrong direction. He shot the wrong way. Didn't really address the comment I made in one of the shows, went the wrong direction, and so what might as well go back up. If we had an atheist that actually attacked what we said, this is the show we would do. So let's put it that way. So, all right, here we go. Let's talk today about... Elliot had a question.
Yes.
About the UFC.
Yeah, well, sort of, yeah. So I'm a big mixed martial arts fan.
Ultimate Fiddling Championships.
Yes, since I play the fiddle.
You do.
I do. Yeah, so...
I think it's biblical.
Ultimate Fiddling?
Fiddling.
What do you need to have those?
I'm
like
snorting a lot today.
You are.
They get in there, they face off. It's time! Try to poke each other with the bow.
People protesting outside. This is unbiblical. It's a wicked thing.
It's a wicked thing. Yeah,
fiddling is okay, but ultimate fiddling? Come on.
Yeah.
It sounds dangerous. Okay. Yeah, so.
Just give me a backtrack. That's
ahead.
All.
So I'm a fan of the UFC, mixed martial arts and ultimate fighting. In fact, I'm going to watch a couple shows this weekend. But the reason why I actually wanted to talk about it a little bit is because I've sometimes wondered, people bring up whether or not fighting is sinful, let's say in the context of sport. So the UFC is a well-known organization, and if you pay attention at all, there's actually several people who are outspoken believers that fight for the UFC. And so Jeff is also a martial artist and has competed and done all kinds of things, which I'm sure you guys all know by now because he can't stop talking about it. I just wanted to get your perspective on that. Is it sinful to compete in competitive combat sports, be it boxing or ultimate fighting? What's your take on that? How does the principle of turn the other cheek apply to it, if at all? And just want to see what you thought.
Yes. Joy, do you have something to add there? I heard a little breathing. No, you're good. Okay. No, all right.
Just, a little breathing.
Just breathing like I normally do.
All right. So this is the question itself. It's not like there's a passage like, you know, in First Bubba chapter 5,
the section
about MMA sort of a thing. You just don't have that in the Bible. So these kinds of questions have to be answered on biblical principles. And so we have to say, what are the biblical principles about the image of God, about violence and those sorts of things? And okay, so what do you see? You see across the Bible a broad general view of combat. You see it as a good thing. The Old Testament is replete with examples of godly, righteous conflict sort of a thing, and that takes place. You also have Psalm 144:1. Blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war, my fingers for battle.
Yes.
Blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war, my fingers for battle. By the way, in my karate school over a decade ago, we had a big sign up as you walked in, and that was the verse up on the wall in the martial arts school that I owned. So blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war, my fingers for battle. That's the word of God.
Yep.
Okay? So that's in the Bible. And so that's a principle. That's a very good thing. Bless God for training my hands for war, my fingers for battle. Now, again, you say we take that verse right as it is, and you're like, great, there's violence, violence. But no, it's because in the right context, war and battle can be a righteous thing. And so blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war, my fingers for battle. In the right context, not just to capriciously murder and slaughter people, you know, and to do violence sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's the context. But so when we think about the Bible displaying, look, this can be a very good thing. So amen to that. So martial arts, in a sense, fighting, martial means fighting, so fighting arts. Martial arts is, I think, beautiful because martial arts is an expression of art. One of my things that I used to love to do in martial arts, I have 5 black belts, I have 4 in a combat system of Taekwondo, I have 1 in a combat system of karate, one of the things about martial arts is obviously that it was created for defense, for defending land, for defending your home, family. And so martial arts has developed over many, many centuries in different contexts. So, for example, yes, some martial arts actually developed out of a sort of spiritism, a mysticism. And it was a spiritual basis to it. So there are some martial arts that cannot be detached from their pagan sort of spiritualistic roots. You can't actually divorce it. So Tai Chi is one of those examples. Tai Chi can't actually be, in reality, divorced from its beginnings. And so there's arts like that. There are arts that I would say for Christians to not engage in because you can't really divorce them. But some combat systems were developed solely for the purpose of combat. Whatever the spiritual beliefs or religious beliefs of the practitioners was, it didn't really have an impact on the martial art form. So it was the science of self-defense. So you would, you know, think about, they would study the human body. How does it function? How do we break it down? How do we, if the arm is designed to do this, we know the arm needs to go this way so that we can break down that design. So they basically look at a person and say, how do we break down this system in a most effective, efficient way? And so that's how martial arts develops. It's a fighting art. It's a fighting science. And so it's artistic. There's beauty to it. When I competed in martial arts, I won. I competed across the nation. I was blessed by God to be able to compete at the biggest tournaments in the world. And I really feel gifted by God to be able to accomplish everything I ever wanted to accomplish in martial arts. I got to stand next to some of the biggest names in martial arts. And it was just a blessing. But what my favorite thing to do was not the sport point fighting portion. It was the actual artistic side. So I think that in my heart, I love to fight better than I love to do the form part.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to love the artistic side. So there's a beauty
that I think glorifies the creator with what we can do with our bodies, with the artistic element of the martial arts. So if you think of like a gymnastic floor routine,
right,
the gymnastics floor routine is this just this artistic thing to music and everything else. Well, martial arts has that too, and that was my specialty. So when I won world championships at tournaments, it was in that element. But I love to fight, I think, more. That's what I like. I love to do. So there's that element of martial arts is beautiful. But then there's the combat side. And the combat side is awesome because you learn how to defend yourself. And then in learning how to defend yourself, you're also learning self-control and how to properly apply that. So, for example, you have some – one thing I used to struggle with, I'll just tell you this, Elliot, was I used to really despise – having these MMA, I used to call them muscle heads, like come into my martial arts school because I can tell when they first walked in the door, it's sort of like an air of cockiness to them. They used to walk through the door and so almost come in sort of a threatening manner, head held high, almost like I'll destroy everyone in your school sort of thing. What do you have to teach me? Mm-hmm. And I used to warn Jerry. Jerry worked for me as my program director. This is over a decade ago. He worked for me as a program. I used to warn him before he came in. I often have guys come in that are these muscle heads, MMA kind of cage fighter guys. You know, just be ready for them to come in and bump their chest against you kind of a thing. And it was like maybe the first week Jerry's there, the first dude comes in and he's like, man, that guy was like, his head was in the clouds. I was like, yeah. That's what we had to deal with. And so one of the things in martial arts, traditional training, combat training, and actually perfecting the art itself developed necessarily was the self-control necessary for learning a combat system. So traditional combat forms of karate, jiu-jitsu, taekwondo, or those systems, kung fu, those systems actually required of you to, if you learn this system, you must learn not only how to apply it, but how not to apply it. And that was one of the important elements. And so you had to learn self-control. So you almost assume somebody that gets their black belt in a system that it basically masters the essentials at a black belt level. Your assumption is that this person has a level of self-control never to use this art unless absolutely necessary. So you're learning what the knuckleheads and muscleheads didn't learn when they just want to sort of just take, you know, pieces here and there and just get thrown into a cage. You're learning how not to apply the system and how to learn self-control. So that's one of the benefits of training in that sense, mm-hmm. is you're learning how to avoid fighting. I'll give you an example. I was, this is about two or three years ago. I was going to Bash's grocery store here late at night. I walk up to Bash's and as a martial artist, you learn self-awareness. So you're always kind of checking your corners and checking your, just cause, and you're not like freaking out. You're just learning self-awareness. And so as I'm walking up, I see this group of sort of thugs standing in front of Bash's, like real late at night, different area that I was in. And as I'm walking up, I can look at them and I'm self-aware. So I'm watching them and I see them sort of like looking at me and they're planning something. And so they're kind of like nudging the one guy like, do it, do it, do it. And so the one guy, this thug looking dude, walks up to me and I'm walking in the door and he sort of looks at me and goes, hey, dude, look, he points with one hand down the street to try to get me to look that direction. And I notice in the other hand, he's balling up his fist and he pulls it back because he's going to swing at me. So he's wanting me to look the other way so he can swing at me. So the one hand is sort of close to his chest he's going to hit me with. He's pointing the other way. He's like, check, look, look, dude, look, 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 look. And I'm self, I don't look. I just immediately, I see his hand sort of move towards my face. I put my hand on it, I pin it, I trap it against his chest. I have my thumb locked against his wrist, and I immediately locked his hand against his chest and twisted it into his chest. Mm-hmm. So he's stuck now with his wrist locked against his chest. And I say, hey, what's up? How you doing? And he feels the force come down on his wrist lock up, and he kind of his belly moves in. He's like, huh? Huh? And he looks at me and he goes, nothing, nothing, man, nothing. And I have him locked up, and I'm just like, you good? And he's like, yeah, yeah, man. I'm like, okay. So I just stared at him. I said, we good? And he goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so I pull away and I walk right around him. So there's an ability then to note like, okay, which force is necessary? What do I have to do, not have to do in this situation? So there's the benefit of training, is that sort of a thing, self-awareness. How much do I have to do, not do? But when we come back, let's talk about the element of like two guys coming together and clashing and blooding each other's faces. Because that's what usually causes problems, right?
Yeah.
Okay. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio. We'll be right back.
All right, we're back. Talking about the UFC Ultimate Fiddling Championships. Ultimate Fighting Championship. All right. So we left off talking about the ability to learn the martial arts sort of develops within you self-control, learning to control what you do.
Yeah.
And so one of the things we talked about last night when you and I were discussing bringing this up on the show was in my experience in the martial arts, I used to see the best fighters in the world on a regular basis. Every weekend I was traveling, I used to watch them fight each other. One of the things that always I loved about the martial arts was you would see these dudes that were beasts when it came to like defending fight. It was like they would do things that didn't seem human in the way they could fight and defend themselves and move. It was awe-inspiring. But the thing that always I loved so much and I sort of cherish about the martial arts is that the being able to see these guys control the level of pain they could deliver and where they wanted to hit, when they wanted to hit, at the level that was necessary at that moment, and then to be able to walk away hugging each other, shaking each other's hands with total respect for one another. It's one of the things I really admired about the martial arts is these men are machines in combat of death. They really are. They could do whatever they want. But there's so much of a control to it because they've mastered themselves and this art in such a way that they know what to do and not to do. And there's such a level of respect for one another. So when they would fight, and there's even full contact matches, they're fighting one another, but they're only dealing out what's absolutely necessary. And they're not trying to annihilate their opponents.
Right.
You want to walk away shaking hands, hugging each other, going out to have dinner. I mean, honestly, we would do these major competitions, and after the competition, you know, world championships, grand championships, we'd go afterwards out to eat together, and the guys that were fighting for the main event that night are eating together afterwards, laughing, kicking back, and, you know, they're friends. And I love that about the martial arts. So it doesn't, in that context, I think, develop the idea of just violence and smashing each other's faces in and ending the life of your opponent. You know what I'm saying? I want to bloody your face and destroy you. As a matter of fact, if you behave that way in the martial arts competitions I was involved in, you would have been actually taken out of the tournament if you behaved in that manner. Okay, so now UFC.
Right. So I guess the real question is it okay to be either a competitor, like a Christian prize fighter, or a fan of those things? Is that because I am, if I'm being honest? And I know you like boxing and stuff because I've watched boxing at your house. So the purpose in boxing is typically to, or mixed martial arts, is to either knock somebody out or to submit them. Obviously, you can win on points or whatever, out technician them. So when the point of the sport is to do that to somebody else, to claim victory, is that, where do you draw the line? When does it become sinful? Is it sinful inherently to participate and or to endorse such a thing?
Well, I want to acknowledge right off the bat that there is, because of my background as a martial artist and having 5 black belts and competing in, you know, tournaments across the nation, there's an obvious danger of bias here, not to pay attention to contrary things, right?
Sure.
So, but the thing is, though, is there's no specific place in the Bible that actually speaks to something like this.
Right.
So you have to, again, move on principle. You see that it actually is seen as a righteous thing that blesses God from the believer when God trains their hands for war, their fingers for battle, in that kind of context. So martial arts itself is not sinful at all. But the competition aspect has to come into play. Okay, so here's the deal I would say. Anything that would attempt to promote the marring of the image of God in a person by pure violence, I think is against biblical principle. And so if we were to have a competitive sport where it wasn't voluntary,
right?
Okay, where you didn't have two people competing to win points and win submission in some sense, and they could walk away, shake hands, but it was in fact sort of an underground fighting club where it was just about violence and stomping in the face of an image bearer of God.
Like a fight club.
That would be very unbiblical, you know, to support such a thing like that, because it's just violence. In particular, also, if it's not controlled and it's not sport in its element, because you want to control the level of conflict that happens so that it's not real conflict
right.
about violence to another human being, to crush them and the image in them. But so there's something to consider there. But when you look at UFC and you look at the fights and everything else, you're looking at two people that are experienced professionals, that this is their sport. It's what they do. It's what they train in. And the purpose of the sport in itself is combat. Okay, so acknowledge that.
Right.
And here's the thing. You know, say, oh, I don't like the combat. I don't like the whole thing of like punching one another. Oh, listen, you know, have a good cry and then get back to reality. Okay? We live in a world where there is conflict and there is combat. So, again, you know, cry now. Okay, wipe your eyes. Let's have a real discussion about the world we live in and combat and training to defend yourself. And now we take it to a level and say, okay, now let's have fun with this. Let's make it a sport where we're not trying to end the life of somebody. We're not talking about Roman games here where there's like a person like walking out that's alive. The other one's dead, stabbed through because that was the ultimate goal. By the way, that was a wicked thing.
Yes, yes.
This is sport controlled about submission, about getting up afterwards and shaking hands and respecting one another.
Right.
Now, I acknowledge the fact that it can be bloody, but right. So can tennis. So can football.
Right.
So can soccer. And everything else. And so here's what I want to say.
That guy who bit somebody in the World Cup. See?
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's an element that I think has to be. So all I would say is this. Have it to yourself, between you and your master, to your own master. You stand or you fall. If you struggle with this, I think don't condemn the brother that doesn't. And I would think don't act haughty if you're okay with this and over the person who really struggles with it. I think we need to have unity over this issue.
Right.
But ultimately, I could get behind a sport conflict in the martial arts world because it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. And it does develop some very good skills as a human being in the sense of self-control, in the sense of self-defense, defending your family, those sorts of things. I grew up in D.C., and so I got in fights all the time. A lot of fights. And those fights were never looked for by me. But one of the things that was really a blessing to me with the martial arts is how many times my life was preserved. And I mean that quite literally, preserved, because of what I learned in the martial arts. If I did not know that, I would be dead. I mean, there's times where I was jumped by people, multiple attackers, and I was able to actually defend myself and come out, you know, in victory in that situation because of martial arts. So praise God for my martial arts training. So I'm going to say I see it as a blessing upon us as people to have this sort of a thing. But that would be my two cents.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
What do you think, Joy? You want to fight?
I'll take you.
You think so? No. Yeah. I mean, I'm I love martial arts. I always will. I do. I have times where, you know, for me, like, it's fun just to sit and watch hours of, like, you know, Kung Fu theater. Like, even if I can't understand what they're saying, because I think it's beautiful. There's an artistic side to the martial arts that is really spectacular.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I'll say that for why I watch the UFC and not every single martial arts program or mixed martial arts program is because the UFC typically employs the top level talent and you get to see people that can do incredible things. And I've just always appreciated that aspect of it. I don't personally fight or anything like that, but I've always enjoyed watching it. And just like you said, the beauty to it is, or you see somebody just do something crazy in the cage or whatever, and you're like, wow, or you see somebody lock on a crazy submission and you're like, I didn't even know it was possible to do that. So I appreciate you. That gives me a lot of good feedback to chew on.
Hopefully it's a blessing. Again, there's no verse in the Bible that talks about MMA, but there are biblical principles to stand on. This is how we apply the biblical worldview. ApologiaRadio.com. Be right back with a discussion on Reform theology. Be right back.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
All right, guys, welcome back to Apologia Radio. The issue of Calvinism comes up a lot in this show, not because in any way it has anything to do with a man named John Calvin, or we're fighting for the image and reputation of a man named John Calvin. If you know anything about Calvinism, it really has nothing to do with John Calvin. The debate ensued. The Synod of Dort in history the descendants, disciples of, followers of a man named Arminius. And those who happen to be students of, disciples of, descendants of Geneva, a man named John Calvin, who actually wouldn't have known what tulip was, except if he showed you in his yard, maybe. And so it's known as a conflict between Calvinism and Arminianism, not because of personalities, but because of the subjects that are there. So, for example, what's man's condition? When God saves, what's that based on? Is it based on human will and decision? People responding to God or not? What is the atonement of Christ? What actually happened? When Jesus died, what was it about? What happened? What did he actually accomplish? Did he accomplish anything at all, actually? When God saves us, does he keep us? Can we be lost? Can we lose the life we've been given, salvation-wise? When God determines to save somebody, can he be thwarted by human will? It's those kinds of questions. Now, they're questions that go all the way back to the early church. Issues between Augustine or Augustine, however you want to pronounce it, however scholarly you are, I guess. Pelagius.
Or Pelagius.
Yes. Issues of Pelagianism and, you know, what's man's condition? Is he a tabula rasa? Is he a blank slate? So these discussions come up. Is he born sinner? Is he really sick or is he dead spiritually? That's what this is about. Now, let me say this. There's this atheist that's come after me. He's like obsessed in some sense many times.
Who isn't?
And I only say that because, you know, it surprises me that somebody can get so much so wrong and still continue a discussion. He's put stuff up before about me and then had to take it down and apologize to me because of his error. And even in a last article he wrote about me, he ended up having to change the article at least twice to change and fix it and update it because he would make claims that weren't true. And one of the things he actually accused me of was idolatry. He accused me of idolizing John Calvin and idolizing Martin Luther. Now, the interesting thing here, and this might actually really bring some encouragement to people, I have never, and I plan to, but I have never actually read a full book or a full sermon from either Martin Luther or John Calvin. That's the honest truth. I've read quotes, comments, stuff like that, here and there.
But insults. It's
been the Luther Insulter is awesome. It really is. What's it called again? Do you know where to go?
I think it's like the Martin Luther Insult Generator or something like that.
Right.
That's the best thing ever. If you want to know everything you need to know about Martin Luther.
So, I guess the most I've heard from Martin Luther is like the very rude comments that he made to people.
He likes to talk about his flatulence a lot.
And I don't agree with like how he behaved in some sense there. So this person said, Jeff, idolizes John Calvin and Martin Luther. And the truth is, no, I don't. I don't know how you can accuse someone of idolizing someone. They've never actually read their whole book or a sermon by them. So idolization, no. I respect them and love them as brothers in Christ. I know they did a work for God. But I actually have heroes that are much bigger than John Calvin. And, I don't even know if I call them heroes in any sense. I think, God did big things through them. So this guy has to actually correct his thing and go back and change it. And after I told him what was actually true about what I know about these guys, he had to actually fix his thing. And then he didn't actually even notify people that he fixed it.
Oh, yeah.
And so then I actually confronted the fact that you didn't even... You have accountability.
Put an edit
that
there.
I had to edit this because, and then you finally did that because I confronted that. So anyways, okay. So you need to know the issue about Calvinism, Reformed theology. We're going to talk about that last segment in detail. It has nothing to do ultimately with Martin Luther, or John Calvin. It's about the issues biblically that surround this discussion about salvation, human freedom, the sovereignty of God. It's going to be right back. And I think we're going to hang on the issues regarding the sovereignty of God, the will of man. And we're going to talk about if God is sovereign, what about the responsibility of human beings? And so we'll kind of engage that discussion, give a little biblical foundation here. And so stay with us. We're going to go through the scriptures and prepare you to really rejoice in and be prepared to give an answer for those who ask questions about the sovereignty of God and human freedom. ApologiaRadio.com.
Apologia Radio will be right back.
So the Westminster Confession of Faith. Excellent explanation. Chapter 3 of God's Eternal Decree. Section 1. It says, God from all eternity did by the most and holy counsel of his will, own will, freely and unchangeably ordain whatsoever comes to pass. Yet so as thereby neither is God the author of sin, nor is violence offered to the will of the creatures, nor is a liberty or contingency of second causes taken away, but rather established. Okay, so I think that's an excellent explanation in sort of a capsule of what the Bible says about God's decree and human will. So God is not the author of sin. Humans are responsible for what they do because it's their desire to do it. God doesn't force a particular sinful desire into a person's heart. Ultimately, it's about their nature, what they desire, what they want, their choice. Okay, so the Bible says that God declares the end from the beginning, that he does according to his will in the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and no one can stay his hand and say, what are you doing? And God's will or decree is the ultimate foundation of all events in time. That's why everything has a, what? What do you think? Purpose. P word. Purpose. Everything is purposed by God. Mm. So as a Christian, you could say there are no accidents in God's universe.
No luck. Yeah.
That's right. God is the purposer. He actually plans for his own glory and the good of his people. Mm-hmm. And at times, judgment upon a people, events in history he allows or disallows. We never actually thank God, James White says often, for his restraining us from doing the evil that's within us to do. We never actually thank him for the restraining of evil in the world, that ultimately with the condition of humanity, we would be much worse than we are now, as bad as it is, mm-hmm. if God were not restraining us and holding us back from doing what we want.
And that's interesting because, like, oftentimes, speaking of James White, he talks about God, when God enacts judgment, it's the turning over of people to their sins. So the opposite of that is like what you're talking about, restraining evil. And as he passes judgment, he's just letting us do, letting people do what's in their hearts to do in the first place.
That needs to be understood because, see, let me give to you a few things and we're going to go right into what Elliot was just talking about. We talk about the condition of humanity, okay? Psalm 143:2, enter not into judgment with your servant, for no one living is righteous before you. Take it, absorb it, think about it, accept it. No one living is righteous before you. Romans 11:32, for God has consigned all to disobedience that he may have mercy on all. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Romans 3:23. 2 Chronicles 6:36, there is no one who does not sin. Isaiah 53:6, all we like sheep have gone astray. We have all turned every one to his own way. And then the catena of verses in Romans 3:9 through 12. None is righteous, no, not one. No one understands, no one seeks for God. All have turned aside together, they become worthless. No one does good, not even one. And Mark 10:18, Luke 18:19, Jesus said to him, why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. Mark 7:21 through 23, for from within, out of the heart of man come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can understand it? That's Jeremiah 17:9. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. Our condition is dead. Jesus says in John 8, whoever commits sin is... Go ahead.
Dead.
A slave of sin. Sin.
Sorry.
Dead. Ephesians 2. Dead. Dead.
I'm going to kill you.
Ephesians 2. We're dead in our sins and trespasses before Christ, ultimately. Okay, so that's our condition. All right. So our condition as fallen people is that. So what does our heart desire as fallen people? Our sin. And so what does it say in Romans 1? Romans 1 says they suppress the truth of God, they know God, they exchange God for idols. So what's the consequence of people who suppress the truth of God and they love other gods besides God and they are futile in their speculations? What's the result? It says, therefore God gave them over
to their passions. Yeah.
So what does he do? He gives you to what you're asking ultimately for, what you want.
Right.
So if God determines in his plan, his decree is to turn someone over to their sin, it's turning them over to what's naturally within their hearts, what they desire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's give some examples of what that looks like. God decreeing all things, he's in control of all things, but it doesn't do any violence to the will of the creature. If you think about the story of Joseph and his brothers in Egypt, he's got 11 other brothers, right? And they despise him. His dad is holding Joseph as his favorite and makes him this coat of many colors, which is a very special thing. And he has this dream, Joseph does, and in the dream he comes and relays it to his brothers. And it's obviously he's saying, you're going to bow down before me. And so they hate him. And so what happens is one day his brothers are out tending to the flock, and the dad sends Joseph to go help his brothers. And when he's on his way, the brothers actually say, oh, look, here comes the dreamer. And there's this mockery going on. And so what they decide is, let's kill him. And the only person that stops him is Reuben. That's where we get the name for the sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
The sandwich that stops you from murdering people. That's why. Have you ever really wanted to just kill someone and then eat a Reuben and you felt better?
I can't do it anymore. I can't do it.
But delicious sauerkraut.
But notice something. The brothers all had a problem with him. But when he comes, the brothers were going to kill him. And so they're determining we're going to throw him in this pit, you know, and we're going to kill. So Reuben says, no, don't kill him. He's our own flesh, our own blood. Throw him into this pit, you know, and sell him into slavery ultimately is what they decide. Now notice something. In that moment, their heart was set on killing Joseph, their brother.
Right.
If not for the sovereign hand of God withholding the sinful passion in Reuben, mm-hmm. he would have been a dead man at that point. But he comes to his senses. We can't kill him. He's our own blood. Sell him into slavery. So watch this. Is God making Joseph's brothers desire to kill their brother? That's what's in their heart. They want to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But what does God do? He does not allow them to have at that moment what's within their heart, which is to kill their brother.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's sold off into slavery. And he goes into Egypt. He's in Potiphar's house. And more evil happens in Potiphar's house. What happens? Now Potiphar's wife, she has sinful desires for Joseph, and she's like, lie with me, which is a very biblical way of saying, but knock it down.
Is that when you put out your notes and you do like commentary on a Bible and they look down to see the reference? It's going to say, but knock it down.
It's Christian radio. So
some,
you know,
snaps.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? So she is sinful, and so she wants to, and he actually glorifying God, he's like, no, you know, he's given everything to me. You're his wife. How could I do this and sin against God? Is Joseph's explanation. So then time goes on, and now there's a moment where the house is empty, and now there's no accountability. And the wife comes and says, come lie with me. She ends up basically tearing the coat off of him. Joseph flees, and she lies and says, what? He tried to rape me. It's amazing. What's Joseph got to do with any of this? It's just sin compiled on sin compiled on sin. And what's amazing is Joseph's being faithful. Matter of fact, he said, I'm not going to sleep with you. I'd imagine Potiphar in that day, if he's able to get a wife because of his position, was probably, she's probably a hottie. Think about it. In that day, not saying it's right, in that day, if you're that kind of a position, that ranking of an official, you probably got yourself a hottie, right? And Joseph's now got this, you know, this woman, I'm just assuming now, she's like, come lie with me. He's like, no, I'm not going to sin against God.
Mm-hmm.
So he's being faithful, and now he's thrown into dungeon. But because of the sovereignty of God and his providence and time, Pharaoh starts getting these dreams. And they find out Joseph can interpret dreams. Joseph goes and he says, you're going to have 7 years of famine, and on and on and on. Historical event. Famine actually hits, but because Joseph's in Egypt, all of Egypt is preserved, and so is Joseph's family. Because now what happens is Joseph's family has to come into Egypt for solace, for rescue, for help, and for food. And it turns out many, many, many years later, who is now in charge? Joseph, the brother they sold into slavery. What was their intention in selling him into slavery? Sinful. What did they want to do originally? Kill him. And now, because of the providence of God and his sovereign decree, their sin ends up being what actually blesses them.
Mm.
Because what Joseph does when he finally reveals himself, he says, don't be angry with yourselves, for it's not you who sent me here, but God. What? Not real. Wait, what? God sent me here? But they're thinking, no, well, no, we did. that we hated you. We wanted you dead. We wanted you in slavery. It was us. He says, no, it was God who sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant. It was actually God in his decree allowing them to do what is exactly in their hearts to do, but it was God's intention to preserve for them a remnant, but it was their sin. It was their desire to hate their brother. But then the last chapter of Genesis is what needs to be heard here in this issue of compatibilism. It's their nature and wickedness that desired this. It was God's determination and his will that worked together for his purposes to actually bless those who sinned against him, ultimately, to preserve for them a remnant and to be glorified in the results. Look what happens. In Genesis 50, after all this takes place, Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, and now they're freaking out. They're freaking out. And they're like, he's going to kill us. The only reason he was, you know, not doing it is because he's afraid of dad. And so basically they come to him and they're like, you know, behold, we're your servants. This is 50 verse 18. And Joseph said to them, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? Now listen closely to this. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So think about it. In the Hebrew, it's parallel. As for you, you meant it. It was your intention. You meant it. You wanted to kill me. You sold me into slavery. You did this wicked thing. You meant it for evil. It was your intention. Your responsibility in this is that you wanted this. It was within you to desire this. And God meant it for good, to preserve a remnant. And so you see here that in the issue of God's sovereign decree and his power and the responsibility of a human being, our nature desires these things. God is not putting a gun to his brother's head or a knife to their throat saying, you send your brother into slavery. He is ultimately in that moment allowing them to have the desire of their heart, but only so far as he allows it. And you can move that discussion where? All the way down to the murder of Jesus. What's the most wicked act committed by the hands of people in history? The murder of Jesus. And so in the murder of Jesus, you have the righteous Lamb of God, the Son of God without sin, who is the righteous one, taking upon himself the sins of his people. How so? Well, God is presenting him publicly, Romans 3 says, as a propitiation for our sins, so that God may remain just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. But what was the prayer of the early church in that moment where they're praying about the death of Jesus? They say, gathered in this city against your holy servant Jesus was, and then they list Pontius Pilate, the peoples of Israel, the Gentiles, and Herod. And they say, to do whatever your hand had predestined to occur. Think about how many times in Jesus' ministry, guys, how many times did they try to kill Jesus by stoning or trying to attack him? How many times?
Lots.
They wanted to kill him many times. Mm-hmm. And yeah. What happens every time? Not his time.
Not his time.
It was not God's determined time to give them what they wanted. And Jesus escapes. Mm-hmm. God withholds from them the ability to kill Jesus until it's the time God has determined for his purposes and for our good. And so amazingly, what they actually display there in that prayer is that Herod, Pontius Pilate, peoples of Israel, the Gentiles, all gathered against Jesus. Every one of them has different motivations and different sin playing into that moment. They all got different sin. Herod has got a different, you know, intention and motivation. So does Pontius Pilate. He's a coward. The peoples of Israel, Jesus exposes them. James White points this out often. And to do what? Whatever your hand had predestined to occur. God predestining for his glory and his purposes the murder of Jesus. Who killed Jesus? Depends on your perspective. Ultimately, it was the Father delivering the Son over for his people because of his love and the demands of his holiness and justice. But who killed Jesus? It was in the desire of the heart of the people surrounding them at that time, Jesus, to kill Jesus. That's Joy the Girl.
What's up?
And Elliot Skinny Jeans.
Yes.
ApologiaRadio.com. Hi, this is Jeff Durbin, host at Apologia Radio. also the pastor at Apologia Church. You can get us at apologiachurch.com. We have officially moved to Sunday morning services. We want to invite you to come and worship with us. 10 a.m. Sunday mornings, southwest corner of 60 and Rural at the Embassy Suites. We are committed to worshiping Christ in spirit and in truth, and to building strong biblical families, and to expositional through the Bible teaching. Please join us for worship as we work towards the exaltation of Christ throughout the world.
This is the Ministry Bear, also discipleship pastor at Apologia Church. The location we're meeting at the Embassy Suites at 4400 South Rural Road, and that's in Tempe. Again, we're meeting at 10 o'clock a.m. on Sunday mornings. Please join us, apologiachurch.com.
Embassy Suites, 10 a.m. Sunday mornings, apologiachurch.com.